September 17th, 1979, talking to Simeon Mountain in the lotto.
A lot of stuff, not everything. Of course, we saved a lot. But we didn't expect it to get that high. We were lucky enough. Okay.
Well, maybe we could start with when you were born and where.
Okay. I was born May 11, 1932, in Upkeikuk River, Dalby. And I don't remember my dad. My dad died when I was 1 year old, maybe 2 years old. I don't remember. My mom is still living. My father's name was Cosmas Mountain. My mother, Vivian Peters, she's remarried.
Well, what were they doing at the Dalby then when you were born?
I guess they were up there for the spring, trying to catch muskrats. I guess I belong to Kaikuk River. Yeah.
Did your family spend time up there every year on the Dalby River?
No, I guess that was the last time they went up. I don't think they went up there anymore. Then, when I started remembering, my uncle Dan Cipri adopted me. Dan and Jesse Cipri. And, well, I lived with them ever since I started remembering. And we used to stay up Caillou in the spring for hunting muskrats. And then in the fall, sometimes we used to stay down at 9 Mile, cutting wood. So I missed a lot of school.
Well, maybe you could tell me some of the things you remember when you first started remembering.
When I thought I dreamt, I always think about this. And I told Josephine, my wife, once. We were somewhere, my mom, I remember my mom, and she was carrying a small, a baby, and then there was someone smaller than me, or bigger than me, I don't remember. There was four of us. We were standing on land, and there was water all around us. I thought I dreamt now. I told Josephine few times about it, and she told me that, she told mom, and mom told her that was the 1936 flood. My uncle Dan Cipri was shuttling people. I guess he was the only one that had a boat, and he was shuttling people to higher ground. And we were the last ones to get evacuated.
Where were they being evacuated?
From Caillou. Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I remembered.
Did large groups of people, did some families go out?
Oh, yes. Everybody, almost the whole town used to go up. Used to be a lot of fun visiting each other's hunting and stuff like that. Now, no one goes.
Do you remember some of the people who went? What the families' names were?
Yeah, Silas, McGinty's, and Stickman's, Saunders. Almost everyone used to go, and at every camp there used to be 2-3 families. One thing I didn't like about ours, we were always alone, our family. And, well, you know, I used to be lonesome when we were growing up. I used to want to stay in one of the other camps with 2-3 families, you know, so we can stay with other children. but we were always alone. Same way down at 9 Mile. Actually, it was 10 Mile. It was the McGinty family and Saunders family were at 9 Mile. They were cutting wood too. Used to cut wood for the boats, steamer Nenana and Alice and all those big boats. We used to call it. We used to cut wood in the fall and all winter. Maybe we had contract to cut 20, 30, 40, 50 quarts maybe. And then in the springtime, the boat would land at those wood piles. And, you know, I guess they used it for fuel, you know, to keep the boats running.
And your whole family?
Yes, the whole family used to cut wood.
How many people would that be in
your
family?
In our family, we were... my uncle and aunt, Daniel and Jesse, there was Yvonne, Winnie, Priscilla, Edward, and myself. Of course, oh, and Janet was an adopted sister too. They were all too small, so... most of the time it used to be just uncle and I cutting wood, and Janet used to help a little, putting the branches away from the tree. The others were too small.
I guess that was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Sweet saw.
Sweet saw, yeah. Two man saw used to be. Do you ever, are you familiar with the two man saw?
Well, I know.
I've seen
him.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Big, 5 feet long. I remember when the sweet saw came. Boy, we thought that was something. I used to have to cut wood all the time. I used to cut wood for tree houses after I got a little bigger and go to school here. Besides, I used to work at the clinic. And I remember when the sweet saw came. Oh, I thought it was something. And when the chainsaw came, I was one of the first ones to get a chainsaw. I got it after I got out of the army. When I got out of the army, they paid me $750, you know, get out. I had $400 in a soldier's deposit, plus my pay. It was a total of $750. So I bought a chainsaw and a radio to bring home. And when I started up the chainsaw, for the first 4 or 5 days, everybody used to gather around, sing, you know, chainsaw. David Bradley, I had it for many years. I just took it apart and I even made parts for it.
You made parts for it?
Yeah, just not nails or anything. I used to make it run with wire, strings. People used to laugh. I had it for many years. I think I still got it in the cache. I don't remember.
Well,
just have it for souvenir.
1954.
Well, when the sweet saw came, how much easier was it to cut wood?
I would say it was about 5-6 times faster than two man saw, and much easier. It's lighter, you know.
And so you mean where you could cut one cord with a two man saw, and cut how many cords with a sweet saw?
Well, maybe two or three. But the work is a lot easier, and you know, you can cut faster, much faster.
How does that compare with the chainsaw?
The chainsaw would... you know, 12, 15 times faster, maybe. Yeah. No, I don't cut wood no more. For the last 2 years, I've been burning oil. I burn with all my life.
You like that oil better?
It makes life more easier for me. And time. I'm pressed for time. But I used to have to find time. I used to have to quit weed in the dark a lot of times after the post office closed. Or during the day sometimes one of the family, my wife or my sister Winnie lives with us too. While they're watching the post office for me, I used to cut wood. And when they come in, get into a problem, I'd have to quit and come in and, you know, show them how.
Well, what did you used to get for pay for those cords of wood? Way back for the steamers.
I'm not sure what my uncle used to get. Oh, I wasn't very old, so I didn't pay attention. But I remember when the wood was $12 a cord. A lot of people, we used to sell wood to each other. You know, go up the river in the fall and people used to get 10, 20, 30 quarts. And they used to sell it. Maybe 4 or 5 men would go in together. I remember once we went up to Yuki after I got married. You know, we had only 2 children at that time. That must have been around 1960, 61, somewhere around there. Went about 10 miles below Ruby. We got about 60 quarts. It was 3 or 4. Different families, 2 or 3 members, you know, from each family, but we were all together in one boat. We used to have inboard boats, inboard motors, those days.
So that's when you went to Euclid to cut wood?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
Around 1960, 61.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. People don't cut very much wood now. By this time, all the time, I mean, every fall, piles of wood. Of course, this year, a lot of people got wood too from the new town site. Last year, they cut wood, you know, the trees, and they just put it on the side of the road for anybody to use. So, a lot of people got wood
this year. There's a new town site there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was that by the new community
hall? It's way past it. Have you ever been there?
Mm-hmm.
I'll bring you back and I'll show you my lot before you leave.
Mm-hmm.
Then I lived with Mom. For a while I was going back and forth between my uncle and my mom, you know.
How old were you when?
Around maybe 8 or 9 years old. When I started staying with my uncle and aunt for good, you know. But while I was staying with my mom, we stayed below Caltech, about 30 miles maybe, I'm not sure. Anyway, the name of the place is behind the island. I stayed down there too. I remember one fall. My uncle, my stepdad was trapping. In schooling, I went to 6th grade. And,
when you were going back and forth from your mother and your uncle,
mm-hmm.
did you like that? It's like having two families, or was
I didn't mind it. First,
don't
First, I used to want my mom. You know, real jitsu herd, a lot. And then after I got used to it, it didn't bother me. I didn't want to leave my uncle after. He was the best friend I ever had. I remember how I cried when he died. He died of cancer. Forgot when, around 1958 or 59, somewhere around there. Anyway, I think it was a couple of years after we got married that he died. We got married in 1958.
So did you stay with him all the time? Mm-hmm. From
8 years
old on?
Mm-hmm. Until, until I was 24, maybe. I didn't even move out from them for a long time, even after I built my house.
Well, what kinds of things did he teach you when you were growing up?
He taught me how to work at fish wheel. He used to work at fish trap. We used to have fresh fish year round. Not one kind, you know.
What kind?
Well, grayling, lush, trout, chief fish, and little greasy white fish. Come in. Well, I should tell you how we used to get them, pardon? Yes. I should tell you how we used to get. Okay, in the fall, this time of the year, we used to put in fish trap across the Nalada River, all the way across. Now I guess it's against the law. We could put the fish trap only halfway. We cannot block the whole river. We used to block the whole river in those days.
And what kind of fish trap?
It's a small wire. We used to make it by wire, and maybe about 5-6 feet long, and a little funnel in the front. And we used to face it up river, and the fish coming down river, get caught. We used to put the fish trap right in the riffles, put in pegs all the way, and put willows against it, and then the fish would swim up river, facing up river, but they're drifting at the same time. Then they go like that, and they go into the fish trap tail first, you know. We used to catch, this time of the year, we used to catch little white fishes. In Indian, they call them Siluka. In white man way, we used to call them just little white fishes, little skinny white fishes. Then we used to catch trout, graylings, and lush this time of the year. Mm-hmm. And then...
You have Indian names for all of those?
Most of them, but it would take me time to remember them, you know. Okay, and then later on in the winter, around February, we used to put in fish trap out in the Yukon, a bigger one. We used to catch lush and chief fish, white fish, and little white fish. Not the same kind of little white fish as we used to get in the Nalada River. These ones are about the same size, but they're fatter and they're greasy. And in Indian, it was just on my tongue now. Delmaka, what we used to call them in Indian. And then in the summer, fish wheel. We catch white fish, dog salmon, king salmon, not very much king salmon, silvers, and chinook salmon. My uncle never used to use fish net, only fish traps and fish weed. And I was to put in a fish trap is a lot of work in out in the river. In the latter river, it's easy, but out in the river, first you gotta go out in the woods and find a big tree that'll split easy into little sticks. I used to see him working way late at night, midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock sometimes, sitting down on the floor and splitting these things. A lot of patience. But the only thing I think that would get me stuck to put in a fish trap, I think about it a lot of times, but I'm sure I can put one in, because after I got a little older, I used to just like I used to direct the operations. There's a certain way you got to put fence and these poles and everything. I used to be the eye man. He let my Uncle Dan let me do that. And even I didn't like it. Sometimes you make mistakes. You have to put in those poles, and you can't see what you're doing down in the water. 6-8 feet, the pole has to go down 6-8 feet, and you don't know. You don't know what you're doing down there. You only look at the top, and that's how you set your poles for your fish trap. Of course, the fences is nothing. You can put your poles in any old way, you know. But out there where you're going to have to fish trap, it has to be perfect, because there's nothing guiding it. And there's only two poles right here, another two poles over here. And then you put the fish trap. The fish trap is so wide. And the fish trap has to hit in between these two poles, these four poles. See? There's nothing guiding it. The only thing you guide it with your hand when you, but it has to be perfect. And the only thing you have to work by is the top party, you know. But so as far as I remember, we never had no trouble. Other people had trouble. If you don't put in your poles right, your fish trap will go in between. You'll have a lot of trouble. You have to pull it back out and reset the pole, otherwise you'll have, you know, trouble all the time.
When you first set that, is it set in the ice?
Mm-hmm. We have to chop about 5 feet of ice sometimes, maybe. We stand in the groove that we're chopping, and it's about this, and we never go through yet.
You know. And it's up to your chest.
Yeah, and we never go through. Yeah. Oh. And it takes a long time. It takes a long time to put in a fish trap. Getting this little sticks ready. And even when you start putting in the trap, when you're out there, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of patience.
How would you fix those fish afterwards? Some be dog food and some for you to eat?
Most of it during the winter, most of it was for food. We used to sell a lot of fish. My uncle used to sell them cheap. We used to even send them to Fairbanks.
Which ones did he sell?
White fish and sea fish and lush, but not too much. Most of the time, though, we were sending some to, people were buying some from around Fairbanks, white fish and sea fish. We never get them no more.
How would you get it to Fairbanks
There used to be a pilot here, and I mean, it comes down. We used to put in an order. So when there was room on the plane going back, we used to... he used to haul some back, you know. And I guess he resold them, I don't know. Probably. So, we ate a lot of fish when I was growing up. But I didn't mind it because it was all different and fresh. It's not like going into your freezer right now. You know, we have king salmon and silver salmon. But it's it doesn't taste the same, you know. Yeah.
Well, does anybody fish for fresh fish in the winter now?
No. A few people put in fish nets and get white fish and sea fish, but not very many.
They put those in the
Yukon. On the Yukon, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the fall, we put in hooks out in the ice. Last fall we did, and we caught a few lush. We just put these hooks. It's just like bait hook, but it's pretty big, you know. It's not them small ones. And we just put a piece of fish on it. Put maybe 10 hooks on one line. We have holes on both sides, and we just string the line under the ice. The fish come along and bite it and get caught. And a lot of people did that last fall. So we're going to do that again this year.
Are you going to do that this year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Nome next weekend too. I'm in the National Guard too, you know. I'm the first sergeant in the National Guard. And we're having NCIC and first sergeant's meeting this coming weekend. So I'll be going to Nome. And that's one of the things I want to buy is fish hooks. Most of the time, all our life, you know, up until a few years before Uncle died, we never had no boat, no inboard, no or outboard. We used to walk pulling the boat 2.5 miles upriver every morning in the hot sun. I got to where I used to hate that walk 2.5 miles pulling a rowboat. Then we used to put 500 fish in the boat and, you know, load up all on power.
Well, how would you pull that boat up? So would there be two people?
Mm-hmm.
One in the boat
and one in walking. Pulling.
And walking
most of the time, I was younger. I was a teenager, so I used to walk. I let my uncle steer. Yeah.
I guess that's the thing when you're younger.
Yeah. For a while, we had a couple of dogs that were pretty good. They were pulling us. Yeah. It was like pulling a sled. They walk along the beach. You put a harness on them, sit in the boat and have a free ride.
Does a dog have to be especially good mm-hmm. to do that?
It has to be, you know. And then when you get to a fish wheel, you know, you have to row around it.
So the only way to do that is row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to row real hard. Yeah, the current is strong. Now all you gotta do is get in the boat and pull the kicker. Yeah, take off. Yeah. I used to enjoy it doing that, but sometimes I used to say to myself, I'm gonna buy a kicker first chance I get.
Did you?
I did. Yeah. I don't remember. Be around 1960. Oh yeah, it was after I got married. Just a few years before I got married, my uncle bought an inboard motor, and I forgot who built the boat for us. So before I got married in 1958, we must have had a boat inboard for about 3 years before I got married. Remember, I used to borrow it Saturday nights to go down just in some Caltech. I used to borrow it Saturday nights to spend the weekend in Caltech. And I remember it used to be such a long trip coming back. I forgot. About 4 or 5 hours, I believe, it used to take coming back. Now you go down there in a, with a 20 horse, be back in an hour and a half.
You have a boat now?
Mm-hmm. I have a 20 horse. And a 40, but I used to 20.
Oh, it's a lot faster than walking tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Yes, I just came back from, I was up Kaikuk River. Maybe 120 miles up Kaikuk River. 18 miles from here to Kaikuk, so it must have been now about 140 miles from here for the weekend. Didn't get anything though. We saw 2 moose already. But we didn't get a chance to shoot it. And the other one was a cow, and it's against the law. Yeah.
Do you want to break now? Is it?
Well,
5, 15 minutes up.
Yeah, there's a lot of people though. Even if we do go up there, we'll be waiting another 30 minutes before we can get to eat. So we can maybe wait another 15 minutes.
Oh,
okay, now that brings us up to.
Actually, what other things your uncle might have taught you? You mentioned fishing.
How about
fishing? No, my uncle wasn't a hunter. So, I more or less had to learn by myself. And, other people, you know. My uncle was a fisherman. And I think it's better to be, I wish I had his skills. Because you know how to fish year round, you'll never get hungry. But hunting, a lot of times you come home skunk. You know, especially when you have to feed a family. I remember before Uncle died, he was telling me, you know, to teach my cousins. Well, they're my, just like my brothers, I was raised with them. I remember him telling me to teach them how to hunt, you know. Right off, when I start hunting moose, I start being lucky, you know, and that made Uncle worry for quite a while, because it's no good, in our Indian way, it's no good when you're too lucky. People say, you know, you're not going to do that for long, you know, you wouldn't be around long, you know, if you're too lucky in anything. No, sometimes it's good to be a little out of luck, I guess. Yeah.
Did you worry about that for very long? Did you keep being lucky?
Me? No, no. It didn't bother me. I was just a teenager. And no, it didn't bother me.
Christmas.
Maybe about 15. Oh, my uncle and aunt never used to want me to go hunting. We wanted me to handle gun. They were always afraid.
Why didn't they like guns?
They were afraid of accident. I guess the reason, one of the main reasons, my uncle, my other uncle, I don't know him, Uncle Dan's brother, Edward, his favorite brother, and I guess everybody's favorite. I hear people talk about him a lot of times. He was shot by accident up on the Cayo. They were hunting rabbits. You know how they, you ever hear about them? You know, people will line up and walk through the woods and chase rabbits to one, to a point of an island or somewhere. And then when they get to the point of the island, all the rabbits will be there and everybody shoot. And I believe that's how my uncle was shot. He was very young too. Maybe 20. Then another person was shot too during that. And I remember people saying that he didn't holler or anything. They heard a shot and he just fell to his knees and they just said, "God have mercy," or something like that. My uncle Edward, though, bled to death. They didn't know about tourniquet or anything in those days, I guess. They shot him in the leg. And he lost all his blood coming down. So I guess that was the reason why they never wanted me to handle gun.
Did people start hunting different ways after those accidents?
Well, now, we do that too sometimes, but we all use shotguns. You don't use 22, you know, because they glance, you know, ricochet off things. But shotgun, you know, it just goes into the ground. We do that once in a while across the island, a whole bunch of us. But everybody use shotguns. So there's no danger, just so long as you're not pointing at someone, you know. The different sizes, 20, 16, 12, 410.
Do people do that every year?
Not very often now. Once in a while we all get together, the younger people. Middle-aged people, maybe. I will go across the river tomorrow, I think. So, yeah. I'll set a time, then we go over. I think the last time we did that was about, well, maybe 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
You wait till there's a lot of
rabbits. The last time we did that, maybe we got about 10 in the group. And the last time we went over, there was quite a few of us, maybe about 10 of us, 10, 12, 15, something like that. Everybody keep what they catch, which usually isn't very much, one or two each. Remember the last time we went over, one of the men got one alive. It went inside of a little snowbank. He saw it going in, put his hand in, grabbed it. It wasn't shot.
Well, how would you go about teaching yourself how to hunt? How would you start doing that?
That's a good question. It's figure it out, I guess. You go out and hunt, and after you hunt for a while, you can tell, you know, moose tracks, especially. That's the ones you want to watch out for. You can tell whether they're fresh or a day old or 2 days old or this morning. You know, after you do that for a while. And then to, if it snows, it's common sense that you can, it, like the other day it snowed. You can tell whether the moose crossed around there before the snow or during the snow or after the snow. And then too, you have to take wind and stuff into consideration. You know, you want to walk downwind against the, where you think the moose might be. You don't want to walk with the wind, because if they smell you, they take off right now. And when you're in the boat, you look for clearing as you're traveling. You know, you look along the bank. If you look, it's like a clearing. You want to stop there, check out, you know, if there's a lake. That's where a lot of times you'll see moose. Only lucky people drive right up to it, or you don't have to work packing it, you know. Sometimes we have to pack moose long ways, half a mile, sometimes a mile maybe.
What was it like that first time you got a moose? Were you by yourself?
I don't remember when I first got a moose, but I remember one of the first ones I got. We were hunting up Kike River, not Kike River, up on the Yukon, Bishop Slough. That's right across Bishop Mountain. And Ivan, my younger brother, and Ray, a good friend of mine, drowned it across the river. Three of us were hunting, and we didn't know very much about hunting. So we went down Bishop Slough, about less than a mile. It was getting dark, so we wanted to camp around there. We stopped in just one place, and looked like there was a creek, dry creek. So we just started walking up this dry creek. I was ahead of them. And after we walked a quarter of a mile maybe back the dry creek, I saw some kind of old tracks coming toward the dry creek. Then I say to myself, well, they might be coming from a lake. I'll just backtrack. Even though the tracks is old, I'll just walk. I'll follow their tracks to see where they came from. So I started to do that, and I turned around to look for Ivan and Ray. They were not behind me. I looked up the creek. I see them walking away. So I just kept following the old tracks into the woods. Pretty soon I started coming into an opening. It started getting daylight. So I walked up to here. It was a small lake. It wasn't too big of a lake. And I started sneaking up slowly. They stopped once in a while. First one I saw a moose, a cow moose. And then I got pretty close to it by that time, but I I didn't see the bull. And they always say, you know, to be careful. You're supposed to get the bull first before the cow. I think the cows was open to in those days. And